Mr. Larson can, Tim can join us when he can. So, Anne, if you'll want to turn on the recorder, I guess.
It's on.
Okay. So, this is Wade Watkins. I'm chairperson of the Utah Board of Accountancy. Would like to call this meeting of the Utah Board of Accountancy to order. It is now 4:02 p.m. on September 8th, 2016. This meeting is being held electronically. The anchor location is room 464 of the Heber Weld Building in Salt Lake City, Utah. Notice of this meeting was provided as required under Utah's open meeting laws. In compliance with Utah's open meeting law, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety. The recording will be posted to the Utah Public Notice website no later than 3 business days following the meeting. In compliance with Utah's open meeting laws, written minutes will also be prepared of this meeting. Appropriately marked pending approval minutes will be available to the public no later than 30 days after the close of the meeting. Approved minutes will be posted to the Utah Public Meeting Notice website no later than 3 business days after approval. The following board members are in attendance: Wade Watkins, Robert Feuer, Carrie Woolsey, Michael Gregory, and Kim Larson currently is absent. The following individuals representing the Office of the Department of Commerce are in attendance: Ray Walker, Dan Jones, and Ann Naglin. We welcome any visitors and interested persons. Please be sure to sign the attendance report for the meeting and identify yourself before speaking. Also, as a courtesy, that would be hard to do to turn off cell phones because most of us are probably on cell phones, but mute them if you can for background noise or whatever, unless you need to speak. Board motions and votes will be recorded in the minutes. Let's go ahead and proceed, I guess.
Dan. I would suggest I go first. What I would like to speak to is why we are recommending a reprimand in this case rather than what may be considered more severe consequences, such as probation or continuing education requirement, if that's all right.
Sure. Let me. I guess take one before we get into that. On the agenda, it talked about the approval of the minutes from yesterday.
Sorry.
So let's go ahead and take care of that real quick, and then we'll go to you, Dan.
Okay.
So, board members, if I assume you have reviewed the minutes, any changes or questions with those?
Wade, this is Bob here. I have for Anne's benefit some corrections on the first page. Under approval of minutes, I think it means to be June 1st. And electronic CPA board meeting, Mr. Jones, I think, explained. And also stipulation needs to be corrected.
Okay.
But with those changes, I see nothing wrong with it.
I can't find, give me just a minute. I think it was missing some of the staff, maybe not. Oh, it was Pamela Bennett. I did not see her name on the as a staff, a doppel staff that was there. That's an addition that I would have.
Yes.
So any other discussion on that? If not, do I have a motion to approve with those changes?
This is Carrie. So moved.
A second.
This is Bob.
Second with Bob. All in favor?
Aye.
I guess, is that okay?
You might call for any opposed.
We'll call because we're electronic. What was that?
Because it's electronic, you might just call for any opposed so that you clarify that there aren't any.
Okay, so any opposed, and please state your name if you are, please. Okay, so no opposition, so they are approved. All right, so then let's move to the discussion item, then the proposed stipulation. So, Dan, if you would set this up, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, I don't want to necessarily get into the facts that are stated in the stipulation or repeat those. What I'd like to do is explain why we have decided to recommend this with a reprimand, even though it was a sizable judgment. In the past, when we've had disciplinary sanctions, we've had probation, we've had places where there's continuing education. When we have an SEC order that has had a certain amount of time suspended where they can practice before the SEC, we've put up them on probation. But there's also been some SEC cases where sizable fines or remedial action has already been taken by the SEC, and in those cases, we decided it was not necessary to put the licensee on probation because the remedial effects had already been addressed by the SEC, and we saw that there was nothing further that really needed to be done. And therefore, we did a reprimand rather than what we would normally consider a more severe consequences given the nature of the violation that may have occurred with the SEC. This case is certainly one that is unique in that it's a civil judgment rather than action by another agency. But it did result in a sizable judgment. And the way I'm comparing this to other cases where the remedial action has already been taken or accommodated for, is in this case, there is a supersedious bond. And a supersedious bond, Mr. Bloomfield has appealed that judgment, and he has posted a supersedious bond. Should he lose the appeal, that supersedious bond would pay the plaintiff, and therefore that remedial action will be taken even if he should lose the appeal. We've placed in the stipulation if he should win the appeal, then we would dismiss any disciplinary action. But given the fact that this case would, what has already taken place would affect most of the remedial action, that's why we are recommending a reprimand in this case. Other cases where we've had disciplinary action, we've placed on probation given the nature of the fine, and in some cases we've ordered continuing education such as ethics classes or that type of thing. So those would be other options. This is certainly not a case that, in light of the whole circumstances, that I would recommend suspension or revocation, but I think the range would be the reprimand, or if you decided there was more remedial action that was needed, then that would be your option. But that's why we're recommending the reprimand in this place in light of the entire circumstances. So that's the end of my comments.
Okay. Thank you.
Sterling Corbett here. Keep in mind that...
Yes.
This is a stipulation where we've agreed upon facts, but none of these have been proven. So there's an advantage to the division in the stipulation, which is why the division agrees to the proposed stipulation. The advantage is that, hey, we don't have to put on the proof of evidence that we may not be able to prove at a hearing. And there's other procedural advantages to the division. It's efficient in that we don't have to have the whole day the board tied up in the hearing for the matter. And there's other advantages I don't want to get into, but I think the division finds it appropriate for these many reasons.
Okay. Any other, before we get into discussion, any other comments by counsel at all, or...
This is Charles Stormont. I would just add, this is obviously a contested proceeding at this point. We are certainly willing to enter into the stipulation at this time, in part because we're in the throes of getting ready for the adjudicated proceeding. Mr. Bloomfield is facing the prospect of tens of thousands of dollars in additional attorney's fees, and we think this is a reasonable resolution of the proceeding. I think for many of the reasons that Mr. Jones and Mr. Corbett have stated, I did want to make one comment with respect to Mr. Jones' comments about the size of the judgment here. Although it's not part of this stipulation, we would certainly plan to show that the plaintiffs in the underlying civil litigation actually received all of the tax benefits of their investments. That is one of the most, I think, serious issues that is being taken up on appeal. This is now a lawyer talking about accounting principles, so please forgive my my inability to use the right terms. But because of the ability to carry forward and carry back tax deductions, I believe at the time these investments were made, it was 3 years back or 20 years forward. There was ample evidence that either at the time of the investments, they two individuals were able to carry back the entire amount that was awarded as damages in the case. The other three were able to take advantage of, I believe, all of the deductions that the investments made available to them within a short period of time, 2, 3, 4 years, if my memory serves me correctly. And so I would just point out that that is one of the very serious issues on appeal. I think it is something that would also come up at the adjudicative proceeding. Although it's not necessarily built into this stipulation, it is something that I would ask the board to keep in mind in considering whether you feel that the public reprimand, in light of the additional information that Mr. Jones provided about the bond, whether the public reprimand is adequate. We believe that if we went through an entire proceeding, Mr. Bloomfield would prevail, whether it was now or on appeal. But in the interest of saving a lot of resources on all sides of this, we think that this is a very reasonable and fair resolution of the proceeding. And I would also add that I very much appreciate, both for myself and on behalf of Mr. Bloomfield, the board's willingness to take this up in this type of a proceeding. Obviously, the Open Meetings Act prevented us from being able to consider it yesterday. But we very much appreciate your willingness to put your time into this. I know that this is a volunteer position, and I as a former public servant myself, I used to work down the hall from Mr. Corbett. I know how hard you guys work, and we appreciate the additional time that you've been putting into this stipulation.
Okay. Well, thank you for your comments. Dan, I have one question. And this is probably partly me trying to understand the legal, right, the way it's written legally and not practice law. So, but when it talks about the public reprimand, what is involved with the public reprimand? What is that?
A public reprimand is a mark on the license, if you will. It's a disciplinary action, but it is not like probation. If it was on probation, then the license would say active on probation. This does not change the status of the license. The status of the license would continue. We granted reinstatement of the license pending resolution of this matter, and right now it says active in good standing. A reprimand does not change that from active in good standing. But if someone should check the record close, they could find that there had been a reprimand issued, and if that's if they find that, then they could get a copy of the stipulation that was involved. So it is it's a mark on the licensing record, but it is not it doesn't affect the current status after it's resolved. It's, the license would be active in good standing.
Okay.
As compared to probation, which would be acting on probation.
So if I pull up his, if I do a license search on the Doppel website, it would show, would it say anything about a public reprimand, or would it just say act, the license is active?
If you looked at the status, it would say active in good standing. If you look at, there's a separate field, has there been disciplinary action, it
yeah.
would say yes, and then you could go to the
okay.
actual stipulation and view that. So
okay.
it's... If somebody has to be looking at, has there been disciplinary action? But it's, you know, it's not hard to get to either way.
This is Mr. Walker. The effect of a reprimand is a finding of unprofessional conduct and public censure, if you will, for that misconduct.
Okay. So it's noted there on the license search. Is it included in the monthly or quarterly newsletters of disciplinary
actions?
So it'll be in there, okay.
Yes, all disciplinary actions of any kind are posted on our public website, and they are they go back to 1999 is, I think, the how far back that we go. So they are on there.
Okay, so, well, that's probably outside of the stipulation. A couple other questions. Does anyone else have any other questions, any of the board members?
This is Kerry. I do. I'm not much of an attorney, so I need a little bit of help. I'm just looking at early in the stated facts, it talks about the finding of the jury was that Mr. Bloomfield was at fault with respect to the 13th clause of action for professional malpractice, dated 2008. I'm just curious, what was the basis for their finding? I mean, does that have to do with the commission issue, or is it some other issue?
Yes, that does have to do with this proceeding. That's part of the contested facts that both counsel has talked about. There's allegations that was made during that unprofessional conduct occurred, and therefore that was the reason for the malpractice action. When we addressed that with the board 2 years ago, we discussed whether the disclosure was adequate when the amount or how the amount of commissions would be calculated was not there. And there was, I don't recall the exact wording, and I don't have it in front of me. I apologize on the other part of it, which maybe one of the council would like to address that.
If I may, this is Charles Stormont again. The question that you have asked dives into what I would characterize as an issue of res judicata. What was decided by the court proceeding? I would suggest, and I would certainly defer to counsel for the division to state his view of this, but in the case of a jury verdict, you don't actually know why they decided one way or the other, because a number of theories and issues were presented to them. We would suggest, and this has been the subject of briefing before the administrative law judge in this proceeding, and part of the reason why we would like to have this resolved now so we can be done and not have to go through additional briefing on a fairly complicated legal issue. But during the trial, theories of liability were presented and eventually abandoned with respect to a variety of claimed theories. With respect to the idea of disclosure of the commission, standards were presented that Mr. Bloomfield would certainly contend don't apply to conduct in Utah. They related to standards in Arizona, which are very different than they are in Utah, as well as standards of practice before the Internal Revenue Service. And there's been no suggestion or contention that Mr. Bloomfield ever did any tax preparation service for the plaintiffs. That is one of the issues that is on appeal, is whether allowing the jury to hear those additional standards that differ, and I would suggest differ significantly from the standard with respect to disclosure in Utah, was appropriate for conduct that was entirely within the state of Utah. Because of those disputes, again, that's why we feel this is a reasonable resolution of this adjudicated proceeding. It allows the division to have note that there was a concern. That allows anybody who looks up the license to review and see that concern and what it was. And it allows Mr. Bloomfield to move forward with his practice and take responsibility and understand that this is a potentially an issue. I will tell you that given the, for lack of a better term, the pain and suffering that Mr. Bloomfield has gone through in the civil proceeding as well as the division's proceeding, I have no doubt in my mind that this conduct will not be repeated. Nothing close to it will be repeated. I believe through discovery, and I don't mean to put words in anybody's mouth, but I believe it's a fair suggestion that the division feels comfortable with that, and that's built into the stipulation. Given those very complicated legal issues that we've really only touched the surface of, I think, again, speaks to why a stipulated resolution like this is a fair result for both the division, for the public, and for Mr. Bloomfield.
Okay. Go ahead, Terry.
I was just, really wondering, is there, the reason I asked the question is because I think at the heart of this, as a board, we're looking at, is there any ethical or professional judgment issue here that we would not be adequately protecting the public from? So I'm trying to figure out what's the ethical or professional judgment issue that underlies this whole thing, if there is one at all.
Jerry?
Yeah.
This is Bob here. Maybe my question goes to the core of it, too, is that I'm looking at this and reading the stipulation. The whole issue to me, the facts in the stipulation all seem to deal with disclosure. And I was going to ask if there are special disclosure rules for CPA industry and CPAs in general and specifically that would mandate more disclosure than it seems that he already did in the thing.
Dan, I can speak to that a little bit. There is a provision in our statute that says when a commission is being received, full disclosure should be made. And one of the issues that was addressed when Mr. Bloomfield met with the board a couple of years ago, before it was had it gone to trial, was there adequate disclosure? He made some disclosure. He did not disclose the amounts or how the amount would be calculated, and there was concern by the board at that time, and they suggested that we continue with our investigative proceeding at that time, given the disclosures that was made. So that's certainly an issue, and like I said, I think we've addressed those in appropriate manner with the proposed stipulation. The other issue was maybe lack of adequate care seems to be coming from the jury verdict. But again, those both are questions that are disputed between the parties and therefore would be complicated in a formal hearing to present, but they would still, both of those issues could go to sections of the unprofessional conduct provisions of the statute. So.
And I would, okay. This is Charles Stormont, I would just refer the board to page 6 of the stipulation. And would suggest that both Mr. Corbett and Mr. Jones have had an opportunity to review a lot of paper from the underlying civil proceeding. And based on their review, at the very top of page 6, you'll see it says on the third line down, having reviewed the proceedings in the civil action that resulted in the judgment, the division's concerns relate to respondents' disclosures of the possibility that he would receive commissions in connection with the plaintiff's investments in light of the jury's verdict. There is a dispute over the scope of disclosure required. One provision of the Utah Code with respect to commissions specifically says that the licensee shall disclose that fact to any person or entity to who the licensee recommends or refers a product, and I believe we have evidence in this instance of numerous such disclosures of that fact. There is a different provision that I believe Mr. Jones was referring to that deals more broadly with conflicts of interest and fully disclosing the nature of the conflict of interest. it is certainly our position that the Utah legislature has determined that commissions are different than other conflicts of interest, and they've set forth a very clear and different standard for the disclosure of commissions and the possibility of receipt of commissions. Without getting into the details of the legalese and the legal arguments that go to that, I again think that there's a point of dispute both as a matter of law and as it ties into the various facts that are presented here over what quite the right standard might be. We have not uncovered any other cases or any other guidance either in case law or from the AICPA that shed any light on what might be required in this situation. I think given that numerous disclosures were made, certainly our contention is that they were made through a variety of documents, through verbal conversations, as well as a letter that was delivered to the plaintiffs. It's certainly our view, as one of the board members just suggested, that perhaps there is no misconduct whatsoever here. Given and recognizing the disputes that exist, though, and in an effort to resolve this, Mr. Bloomfield is willing to stipulate to the information that's in this stipulation and order. And again, I apologize. I know I said we were going to make the Broncos game, and I would keep my comments short, but I'm a lawyer, so you have to forgive me. We have a very strong view of Mr. Bloomfield's conduct being fully in compliance with the law. I think the division, having taken a close look at this and reviewed a great deal of information, acknowledges that that may be the correct result. It is possible that another result is appropriate. And recognizing that dispute, trying to preserve everyone's resources, and thinking about the public safety, we feel this addresses those all of the concerns in a fair fashion. As was just explained, any member of the public who looks this up will have an opportunity to review exactly what it is that the division's concerns were, what conduct was at issue. And so I think that, again, this is a fair way to for the division to carry out its duties and a fair way for Mr. Bloomfield to resolve this matter.
And Sterling Corbett here, I believe Bob and Kerry, you both touched on sort of the heart of the matter, the dispute at issue that's resolved by the stipulation. And it's true that the division felt there was some concern there with the adequacy of the disclosures, but the reason, I think one main reason why the division feels that this stipulation is appropriate is because I think certainly Mr. Bloomfield had to do this over again, or if any event arose in the future, that he would certainly be able to comply with all the statutes, even in the way that the division views them. Of course, Mr. Bloomfield's position is different than the division's, and feels that in fact he fully complied with the standards that were in place, and so there's a dispute or a disagreement about that, but I think the takeaway point is that certainly in the future this similar event won't arise again in the same manner as it did in the past several years ago.
This is Kerry. Can I just ask one other question? What's the nature of Mr. Bloomfield's practice? What does he do primarily?
He does primarily tax planning advice. He does have, I believe, and I apologize, so I can't speak with 100% confidence. He does have some employees who do some tax preparation work. In the past, he would historically, when tax preparation work came to him, he would recommend that work to another CPA because that is not what he did. I believe it was in 2006. Up to 2006, he did do tax preparation work, but he sold off that practice to an accountant in Arizona, partly because he planned to move to Utah in the not-too-distant future. He moved to Utah, I believe, in 2010. But his practice now is his practice lately has been nothing because he hasn't had his license. But prior to the issues with the application and reinstatement, he it was engaged in tax planning advice.
Okay. Yeah, this is Wade. Kerry, according to his website, it's mainly, again, financial estate planning, projection, asset protection, gift tax planning. It doesn't really mention his underneath services as far as tax preparation or any attest work.
Okay, so asset protection, is he also an attorney?
He is not. He works, he when those situations arise, he helps develop the tax planning side of it, and then refers the clients to an attorney to prepare the documents.
So it's sort of I get the impression it's a CFO, contract CFO type work as well. This is Wade. I have a couple more questions. One, I don't remember reading it. I may have in the stipulation, but how long will the public reprimand be on his license?
Dan?
Do you want to address that, Ray, or do you want me?
I can. The legislature recently passed a law that says we can post on our website disciplinary actions for up to 10 years and they automatically fall off of the public website. A person, if they meet certain criteria, can apply at the 5-year mark to have them come off of the public website. But that's only the public website. The items, they're not expunged. They remain a part of Doppel's underlying licensure record and could be accessed through a request under GRAMA for a public document. So
okay. There
currently is no official expungement process, but there is legislatively created a period of time during which the records can be publicly displayed on our website.
Website, okay. So a follow-up question to that. According to the Doppel website, his license currently is active through the end of February of 2017. So as that comes up for renewal, is this something that we will have to revisit at that time potentially, or how does that happen upon his renewal of license?
No, he applied for reinstatement of licensure, and we conditionally reinstate it for a period of time necessary to complete this informal adjudicated proceeding. So once this is completed one way or the other, then the license would be, we would put the expiration just the normal cycle like everybody else.
As it comes up for renewal in the normal cycle, how does the reprimand affect that renewal?
It will not. There would be no limitation on renewing it. It's active in good standing. He would be, there's a question on there, have you been disciplined within the last 2 years? So we'd have to answer yes to that, but we are already aware of that, so it would not result in the license being held up. It would be granted a renewal just in the normal course.
Okay, any other questions from board members?
This is Mike. I have a couple questions that haven't been asked, but I just wanted to validate. Again, as I read through the stipulation, I understand there has never been any other discipline in Utah or Arizona against Mr. Bloomfield.
That's right.
That the research validated that.
Counsel are nodding their head saying, that's right. This is Ray Walker.
Okay, I can't hear nods.
I need to speak up louder too. Yes, I believe that's correct. We didn't discover any other discipline over the 30 years of his practice.
Okay, thank you. And then the last question for the division that I had was, in the document it acknowledges that we don't think that there's going to be any potential repeated type of situation. Help me to understand how you gained that comfort.
This is Dan, and I can address that if that's all right. When we have probation, we have a learning curve with probation. We think this whole process, to a large degree, and the amount of money that Mr. Bloomfield has expended in defending the lawsuit and now appealing that lawsuit, has been a learning experience of it in and of itself. So when I compare this to the SEC actions of a similar nature where they ordered a fine, we've said that fine and that action by the other agency has been a sufficient learning experience that we do not have to do anything more than the reprimand. There's been cases where we do more, like on the SEC when there is audit failures, and they've been prohibited from practicing before the SEC because of those audit failures. Then we also monitor the audits that are performed for other clients that are not SEC. So, you know, because it's a very similar function. But in this case, I think it's more like the SEC type of actions where the remedial action that has happened in the civil lawsuit in and of itself, together with the supersedious bond, is going to take care of that remedial actions to the point that we are confident that if a similar situation would come up again, there would be full disclosure, not only of I'm receiving a commission, but the exact amounts and how it's calculated.
This is Sterling Corbett. I want to throw in there also that certainly Mr. Bloomfield's been put through the ringer, both in the district court case and in our case. We had the opportunity to interview Mr. Bloomfield as well, and it's very clear to me that he understands. He understands from the division's point of view where the division believes or contends he may have fallen short in compliance with the disclosure. And I'm confident that he fully understands now what the division believes is required for full disclosure. And just based on his demeanor and his understanding of the things that he's expressed, I feel confident that that this matter would never arise again. This type of thing would never arise again in the future.
Okay, thank you so very much for responding to those two questions.
Okay, if there are no other questions, do I have a motion with respect to the action?
Wait, this is Terry.
Yes.
I would move that if Mr. Bloomfield wants to stipulate, that we allow him to do so and recommend that this stipulation were be approved.
Okay, I would second that. This is Mike Gregory, and I second
Mike
that.
Mike Gregory. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? And if you would, state your name. Okay, I don't hear any, so the stipulation is approved.
Well, it's not exactly approved. This is Ray Walker.
Yeah. We're recommending that it be approved by the division.
Excuse me, sorry.
Does require the division director's approval of the stipulation and entry of the order. So what we need the board chairman to do is sign page 8 on behalf of the Utah Board of Accountancy and either scan and send that by email to Ann, and that would be A. Naglin, N-A-E-G-E-L-I-N at utah.gov, or fax it to 530-6511.
Okay.
And that will be attached to the official copy here, the original copy, that page.
Okay. So just procedural on that, and so that you know, I won't be able to get... I'm out at a client site, so I won't be able to get that done today, but I will get it done tomorrow. I'll get that to you.
All right. I'll watch for it.
Sterling, do you see any need to send the original behind the fax or the scanned copy?
I think the electronic copy is sufficient.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
And
all right. Any other business or things that we need to take care of?
I have a few questions for Mr. Corbett, but I think we can do them off the record. They're just little process issues. I very much appreciate the board, again, taking its valuable time to consider this in such a timely fashion. and I just want to express that gratitude to you.
Sterling Corbett, I want to echo Mr. Stormont's sentiments. Thank you very much, board members, for taking this issue up in a special session, and I thank you for your services to Utah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Wade, this is Dan. You were going to call me after the meeting, so I'll wait for your call.
Okay, sounds good. So that concludes our business. It's now 4:42, and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye, everybody.
So...